Hello and welcome back to another Radio Roundup from the Sunday Podcast, brought to you guys by sportshoes.com. As always, lots to chat about. Obviously, the British 10K trials, if you can call it that, went down on Sunday. First Diamond League of the season locked in, and loads of races up and coming as well. The track's coming thick and fast, so loads to talk about. We got a pre coming on in 10 minutes as well. He was at Loughborough on Sunday, so we'll let him give us a lowdown on that. Mm-hmm. Matt, Arsenal Premier League champions. I'm hoping West Ham stay up, to be honest, and Spurs go down. But how are you feeling about it all?
It's just a huge weekend, mate. It's a huge weekend, isn't it? I couldn't believe, yeah. Spurs losing to Chelsea. Oh, I mean, we've been unlucky. Yep. They got a harder game, mate. Do you think?
Everton's a harder game. Yeah.
Every game's a hard game when you're in the relegation zone, mate.
Maybe.
But no, we were just talking about how it's good for Arsenal's Champions League hopes, the fact that they won, because they can celebrate last night, they can get it out of their system, they can rest on the weekend, they can go into the Champions League final.
Would you start respecting them? Would you start respecting us if we win a Champions League?
I'd be gutted. I mean, I was just saying how much flair PSG have. If Arsenal win the Champions League, it'd be a sad day for football, I think, because it will show that no matter how fun you are to watch, how good you are as individuals, you can't win.
What's the equivalent is in running, mate? What's the equivalent stinky tactics? I think it's Jakob, mate, making every race quick.
Yeah, it's wave lights. Let's talk about it. It's wave lights. It's the same stinky tactic. Wave lights. 14 men sub 7:30 in a Diamond League. I don't know. Well, that's never been done before. That is absolutely outrageous. And it's day one of, you know, the Diamond League season. And it's, you know, we're here for another 12, 16 weeks. Mm. We're going to see that for another 3-4 months. It was staggering, actually. And 60s, 3K has always been that race where you're like, actually, a lot of professionals, they've been repping 60s for 15 years. Like, 60s are sort of fast, but actually they're quite controlled for a lot of, you know, seasoned pros, 13-minute men, you know, low 330 men for 1500. And so you get them all in a race like that, but it's still just, it's hard to get your head around, isn't it? You know, the fact that so many of them just, they're on the train, no one's blowing up, everyone's in it. The splits are just metronomic. And you get what was actually ended up being, you know, even though I say it was wave lights and it was strung out, it was actually quite an interesting race because of the man who won.
Yeah, Mohamed Abdullahi of Germany took the win. Massive run from him, right? National record. For the Germans, I saw an interview with him saying that he did his last session with Almgren as well, and put him away, and then knew that he must be in decent shape because Almgren's always in good shape, basically. Almgren obviously in third, 7:26, national record for him as well. And then the two chariots, Reynold and Timothy in second and fourth of Kenya. But yeah, what a way to announce himself. And someone that now we're thinking, surely we expect to see him right up there at the European champs, but it is only the 20th of May, so who knows? Mate, the other race I thought was quick, that was quite, it was the women's 15 as well. The amount of sub fours in that. Yeah. And it does just show you how everyone's just ready to run quick, first race out. And it's because they don't need to sharpen up for races like this. They just need to be in good physical shape.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, it's just going to roll, right? So you don't need to do any sharpeners. Like you say, the 60s is fast, but it's not that fast. And now when we're talking about marathon runners running 68s, when you put it in like that, you're kind of like, well, should hope the 3K guys can run 60s.
Yeah, on these tracks and stuff. And yeah, to be honest, I was commentating on the BMC up in Trafford, in Manchester. And actually, when you're watching that, and I was watching Phoebe Gill, and she looked strong. She's, you know, that's her first race back in a long time, 4:05. And you think she was solo. It's cold. It was a bit drizzly. There wasn't any wind. So, you know, that was near perfect. But actually, you know, she's out there running 4:05. You would expect to see, you know, women on Diamond League. That stadium looked, I mean, the weather was perfect. The stadium, the track looks so fast. And I think that's something that, you know, the bridge between Diamond Leagues and just general other track and field meetings is the tracks in these stadiums, man. You know, they're designed to be very sheltered, and they are just, you can, it's just so fast. the surface they're on, you know, and that's come a long way. So yeah, that 355, you know, seeing so many women run 355, 356, it's, yeah, it was a lightning quick 1500. And Abby Caldwell with a huge breakthrough, 356 PB, Jess Hull up to her old tricks is just probably just needs to sort of learn another way to race now for me, because you know, she's squeezing on the third lap only to just be shot at and get gunned down by five women. The sixth, I think that's the lowest I've seen Jess Hull come in a Diamond League in a 1500.
Well, she's not a race.
Yeah. Not the end of the world. Like, you know, she's still running 357.9 and it's May, so it's really not a problem. But it's just the way that she's so predictable.
Yeah. Mate, five Australians sub four.
In the same race, yeah. I tell you, Australia are just on...
It's the time of year, though.
I
know they're running well, but they all just peaked for the national champs, and it's still got five for them in the grand scheme of the world. It's a local race.
Yeah, but they've still got five women sub 4 minutes, and then when you've got five sub four, you're going to start to have five who are like 401, 402. Like, that is seriously impressive. You know, I was just mentioning Jess Hull then. It's because of her. You know, she really has been a trailblazer for Australia, and she's taken, you know, all of these other Australians with her on that journey. You know, they've been chasing her, and now look. Like, I mean, that is serious depth. You know, maybe the US has that depth, but you don't see that in one race. Like, talk of Commie Games.
That is
going to be, it's a shame they can't all do the Commie Games, you know, all in one race. But the Commie Games is going to be a bit of a home countries versus Australia duel. Obviously, you've got Kenya in there, but it's going to be stacked.
Yeah, certainly is, mate. Certainly is. Mate, speaking of trailblazers, Mark English with a win, the Irishman, cut his way through the field. We mentioned right at the start, there's a lot of people in this race and it's all going to be tight. Look, you got Mark English 1 in 143.8, and then 8th place is 144.6.
Yeah, it's very tight. And even that top four or five were even tighter, weren't they? Just blanket finish. But how Mark English found his way through that gap, I mean, even with 50 to go, you're like, he's boxed in. And you know, fair play to Patterson. You know, he was on the shoulder of English pretty much this whole race. And Patterson decides to go wide and try and attack people wide down there, you know, off the top bend down the home straight. English stays where he is on the inside, which actually Patterson's done before as well. And English gets lucky. Little bit of space opens up. You know, you need that change of pace to capitalize on those gaps that open. He was able to do that and he squeezes through, whereas Patterson goes a long way. Early season, just didn't quite have the legs, but that's why the 800 is so bloody hard, man. I mean, Jesus, split decision. You know, one minute you think you're doing the right thing, and on another day, English's tactic would have been a terrible tactic. He would have been blocked off, and he would have come fifth. But how old is he now?
I don't know. He's been around forever.
Fucking
need, fair play to the guy. Like, yeah, he's quality athlete.
In the 800 as well. It's not like he's doing, you know, it's not like he's just chipping away at the 5K or something. Like in the 800.
I think that's why his tactics are so good. He's so experienced.
33 years of age. Yeah. And he PB'd last year. It is, and he looks strong this year. Very impressive.
Well, he's one of them athletes that I feel like we watched when we were like growing up. And yeah, like most of the athletes we see now, we're like, bloody hell, they're younger than us. Like,
yeah,
how old have we got?
Yeah,
but yeah, he's still going. But yeah, I mean, someone else who's obviously very, very used to winning, Faith Kipyegon, destroyed an Ethiopian field. So she's got about eight Ethiopians behind her.
It was close though. She's
5K. Yeah. No, that's what I was going to say. But yeah, they made her work for it, didn't they? 14:24 for the win.
Yeah, I
ran the last 2K out front, pretty much.
Yeah, I think this is the period of. I think we're going to see Kipyegon step up a little bit this year. Dare I say it, we might even see her on the roads at the back end of this year. I look at that World Road Running Championships, and I'm like, what a perfect time for people like Kipyegon to step up. And even, you know, Yaka, I think Yaka with his injury and where he is, I think he's alluding to the fact that I'm not going to quite be ready in, you know, sort of for the Europeans. Maybe he will, maybe he won't, but I think he's going to look at that World Road Running Championships. So yeah, I fancy the 5K there, or I fancy the mile there, or even the half, who knows. Yeah, I think there'll be a lot of athletes who are thinking about that transition on the global stage. To really, they'll attack that World Road Running Championships. I think Kip Yeung could be one.
Yeah, I mean, should we chat about the 10K on Sunday? Priest in the lobby.
Get Priest in. He was there. He was on the ground. I was commentating on the BMC. Hey, Priest.
Hiya. How you guys doing?
We're good, man.
Thanks, mate. You okay?
Yeah, very good.
Good. We were just talking about the Diamond League. But yeah, we want to get your insight on the Loughborough International and how those 10Ks were for people in the stadium, if you like.
Well, that's if there were any people in the stadium, is probably the first.
You were there. I was there.
I was one of the few, unfortunately. I mean, Loughborough International is a great meet, right? And through the day, it was amazing. The weather held out and good crowds and, you know, a few good races. But I think it's just a very well-organized meet. There's food trucks. There's, you know, there's like the team aspect and the guest races put together makes it really good. And you get some of the superstars as well, like Molly Cordry and Jas Sawyers and KJT and others. So yeah, great meet. And that was great. Probably the best distance race was Freddie Rowe beating Ted Higgins. That was pretty good. He's obviously on a bit of a tear at the moment. But then unfortunately Loughborough International ended at 6 o'clock. And there was an hour and a half gap until the start of the 10Ks. So everyone went home. I went off and had dinner, came back. Weather was beautiful, but there was no one there. I mean, there were about probably 25, 30 people on the home straight and maybe another 50 odd people on the back straight, maybe 100. I don't know. We couldn't really tell from where we're standing, but there weren't many people in the stadium at that point. You know, when there'd been hundreds and hundreds, maybe even thousands earlier on in the day for LIA, it was a bit disappointing. But I think I did ask, and I think part of the issue is that it's a separate event, right? It's not part of LIA. It's a British Champs. They needed to put their British Champs branding and all of that up there. But I mean, I'm not sure what the benefit of that was for the purposes of the 100 people in the stadium. Obviously, LIA was a ticketed event. This is separate. And so, you know, it's free entry for those people that came in later on. So there's kind of a few things there, but it just still didn't quite, you know, for the sake of doing all of that, it was like it would have been more accessible had it been during the ticketed LIA event without the branding. And you could have put the branding on the YouTube stream, you know, like I don't know. You could have, or you know.
Well, I'm pretty sure there's enough British Athletics branding around Loughborough's track anyway. It's not like there's none.
Yeah. And look, they could have popped, like they didn't need that gantry. They didn't need to set up the whole gantry. They could have just, you know, quickly put the things on the side by the finish line, which they did, and that's probably the main bit of branding you need. But yeah, that would have made it so much better because you'd have had a full crowd there. But nonetheless, you know, it was perfect weather, perfect conditions for a 10K. I've got a beautiful, you know, the sun was just setting just as they started the men's 10K. Got a beautiful picture of that. Like it was, you know, it was a good time to do it. It was a good location to do it. But yeah, you just wish there'd be more people on that start line, really.
Yeah, I wonder as well, like during the day, was it windy up at Loughborough? Because also...
It was definitely windy. Like it wasn't... Yeah. It was nice and cool, calm in the evening. But during the day, there were a lot of the 400s and stuff, they were really struggling on the back stretch and stuff. So yeah, it wasn't fun. You know, it wouldn't have been great in terms of the wind, but... I'd rather have had a crowd there, to be honest.
Oh, a shame. It does feel like sometimes it's just surely common sense prevails. You've alluded to some pretty good things there. For me though, there should be a little bit of an ownership. Let's talk about the racing. There should be a bit of ownership on actually those who weren't there. I guarantee if you said to any of those, what have we got? Is there 10, 12 men with the standard from the roads and in this past window? And if you said to that 10 or 12, you say, hey, look, it's going to take 28.50 to win this race and you're going to beat Wiggy by 3 or 4 seconds. I know obviously you can't, you know, if they were in the race, it might have been a different story, but surely they would have taken that. And there's there should be a bit of ownership on the people who weren't there, the athletes who weren't there, and where they're choosing to go instead. I mean, I've always said this 10K standard for Europeans is much, much easier than, look, I've never run these times. They're both very hard, but it looks slightly softer just because of the fact we've had so many more people under that standard. One could argue it's a softer standard than the 5K. All of these people have the standard. Why are they not there at the champs and at the trials? I think it is a shame. You know, British athletes have, they've put this race on. And we can sit here and say, oh, you know, what a disappointment. There's five people in the women's race and, you know, what was it, eight or nine in the men's race and two DNFs. It's like, that is a shame. But actually, there's a little bit of accountability for those who want to go to the Europeans, because they're doing everything they can at the moment to say to the selectors, I'm not interested in Europeans.
I think it's a bit tough, right? Because I was looking at that, and obviously some of the guys are marathoners, Emil, Paddy, Alice is obviously...
Emil, yeah, I mean, Emil was entered and clearly he's injured and couldn't do it, so...
Yeah, but, you know, that, as in, it was just, you know, so some of them are the marathoners who maybe weren't going to ever do it. And then, you know, you've got a few guys who've got those times on the roads. And I think what we're seeing is, like, it's so much harder to get those times on the track. And I think a road PB isn't necessarily translating to what that is on the track. And almost you don't necessarily want to show the selectors that, because the moment you show them that, they'll be like, okay, you know, we don't want someone who's going to get lapped at Europeans in the field. So I don't know whether there's a little bit of that as well, that you have to be a little bit careful. But I I'm not really clear on, you know, how these teams are going to be selected, because obviously, yes, you'll get the top one, you'll get Wiggy, you'll get Izzy Fry now going to Europeans, albeit, you know, a pending formal selection. And then, you know, I assume the likes of a Megan Keith want to do it, but I don't know. And we don't really know. And I don't really know how that's all going to play out, because then how do people know whether there are spots available? I think that's the other part of it, right? Because if Megan Keith wants to go, they're going to select her. If Paddy wanted to go, I'm sure they'd select him, right? Like, that is that I'm sure would happen, because they're sort of superstar athletes. And then, but if they don't want to go, like, how do people know that? Like, and how do they then think, okay, yeah, then there are spots available for selection here if I put on a good showing, because I can't secure a spot, but I can get closer to a spot. Yeah, I think there's just a little bit of that with the selection system as to how do you make that work to ensure you do get the superstar athletes if they want to compete, but also giving others the opportunity. And I think it's a bit of a tricky balance.
Yeah. I think, as like, say you're Kingston from the weekend, all you've done is, I guess, reduce the number of 10Ks or hard races you can do this year, because all that race has done for you is just tired you out. You know, you just haven't really got anything out of that. I think it's fair play to him for turning up. Like, I'm not saying he shouldn't be there. I think it's brilliant, but I think that's what the other athletes are thinking, is they're like, well, unless I'm Wigfield or Fry, like you say, Preet, what's the benefit for me of running that race?
No, I agree with that to some extent, but also I disagree. He's got a British medal out of it, and I think we've got to a stage now where a British medal for a lot of these guys, they haven't won British medals before.
Oh, I agree.
I don't know why.
I think they should be happy with that. But what I'm saying is, I think that's the mentality of a lot of the athletes, is they don't care.
They don't care. But also Kingston, you know, we talk about the difference. Izzy Fry's interview was telling. She spoke about the difference between a track 10,000 and a road 10,000. And, you know, when we were speaking about that last week, a few people wrote in and said, you know, well, one, mixed performances shouldn't count. Two, road performances shouldn't count. And they were elites. They were people who have experienced track 10,000s. And what can go wrong in a track 10,000? I think Wiggy realized that during the race as well. In his interview, he sort of alluded to the fact that, Jesus, this is a different event altogether than the roads, the track 10,000. So actually, people like Wiggy, Fry, Kingston, they've got that experience in a track 10,000 in an ugly way as well. Like, it wasn't the perfect, you know, I guess it was, the pace was even, there was wave lights to help them early, but actually there wasn't much to run for. And that would have been a long 10, 12 laps of that race for all of those runners. So they've got the experience going. And if I was a selector, I'd want to see that going into a European Championships. And that's why Izzy Fry will go, like, she's done it before on the track in the 5 and the 10, because she has that experience, because a lot of people don't, and they'll go in for the first time and it will go wrong. And like you said, Preet, they'll DNF, they'll get laps, they'll, you know, be disaster.
Oh, I'm with you, mate. I think they should be doing it. It was more, I think, the athletes who weren't there, that's their view.
Yeah.
I think that's their justification. They're thinking, well, all they care about is running fast or guaranteeing they're making a team, and they couldn't do that. So they're thinking, what's the point?
I think the other bit that was a little bit tricky about these races specifically was, actually, they were expecting. So on the men's side, we had Joel Lillisoe, who's the European under 23, 10,000 meter champion. We had Niels Voigt, who's got a 27:30 PB or something. And they were expecting that those guys would lead it out. They'd make it quick. Unfortunately, Lillisoe pulled up. Voigt didn't have a good day. And I think similarly on the women's side, they had Eva Dietrich, the German athlete, who's got a very strong PB and faster than I think any of the women in the field. And so they thought again that she would do the work. She also had a bad day and DNF'd. So it didn't sort of pan out in terms of that. At least could have helped them kind of almost acting, these kind of stronger athletes acting as pacemakers and also making the races better as well, right? Just obviously the women's race, we did get a bit of a race at the end, like Poppy Tank was there at the end and it was a good last lap battle. But yeah, it was tough out there, and it was unfortunate that Lillisoe, you know, pulled something, maybe his hamstring or something, and then had to DNF. But and the other bit that was really unfortunate was that no one really realised, including Wiggy during the race, did not know whether Kadar Omar was a contender for the British title or not, and he unfortunately is not. I mean, because obviously they put out the finish line tape for him and they didn't put out, you know, and I think if they'd known, they would also then have put out finish line tape for Wiggy as well. But they didn't know, and it took a little bit of working out. And thankfully, one of the officials knew pretty quickly and passed the message around that he wasn't eligible to be British 10K champion. But that was also confusing. I don't think, again, the commentary team on the live stream as well, when I watched it back, I think similarly, I don't think they knew until after the race when they were told. So that was a little bit messy as well. And I think that, and unfortunately on roster, he's got a British flag by his name. And I don't know if he is in the process of naturalizing. He's obviously he was a member of the refugee team. And he's obviously been tearing up and Bassi 10K and other places. But yeah, that was a little bit of unfortunate confusion. But yeah, I think that also then needs to be clear in advance, especially when you've only got 10, 11 people in the field. You should make sure that information is right and is available to the right people.
Yeah, good point, because I was thinking Wiggy did know that, and that's why once he sort of broke away from Kingston, he was just like, I just need to finish this race. But it's interesting that you're saying you don't think he knew that.
No, he told us he didn't. Around, he told his student. So, yeah, afterwards. Because as I say, I mean, like, there weren't that many people there. As I say, there were 20 photographers at LIA. One stayed for British Champs. There were 10, 12 media people at LIA. Two of us stayed for British Champs 10K. That was the unfortunate
thing
about it.
Thank God for you.
That was the unfortunate thing about it, right? It was a little bit of a shame. And I think that's the unfortunate thing with the timing on a Sunday night. I then got stuck in traffic all the way back to London and got home at 1:30 a.m., which I think is the wise reason why others did not stay. But I mean, I'm glad I stayed. I wouldn't have missed it. But yeah, it was a little unfortunate, the whole thing in some ways.
For me, I think the lesson is clear that athletes talk to each other, they communicate with each other, and if they get a sense there's going to be 5, 6, 7, 8 big names at a race, they'll go. And I think that next time, if BA do this again, we saw it at Birmingham, we've seen it this year as well. I think they really need to make a conscious effort to announce athletes who are racing this thing way in advance, get people to commit early, because one, they need to prepare, and two, as soon as you see a few who are committed, that attracts others. You know, if people knew that, I know Emil didn't race in the end, but you know, if the likes of BT Malarkey, they see Emil on a start list, they're maybe going, actually this 10K might be worth it, I might be able to get something out of this 10K. And again, that's the same with everyone else. And then you start to just attract a deeper and deeper field, and you get that commitment. This is a time of year which is extremely competitive. There are so many races for athletes to choose from. And I think athletes don't even know what they're doing. You know, they start the week on a Monday and they don't know where they're going to be on Saturday. You know, there's still so many decisions for them to make. Agents are trying to pull strings here and there. And that's the nature of our sport. It's one of the frustrating parts of our sport as fans as well, that we see these start lists super late. Athletes are very non-committal because they're, you know, they're waiting to try and see the best race or even the race they can get into. But yeah, for me, if you're going to release start lists, you know, 2 or 3 days before, you can probably expect the race to play out in that manner with loads of no-shows and stuff like that.
Yeah. You can write into selection policy as well. And sometimes they do, where they talk about how athletes who show up at a trials will be prioritized. But if you make that clear enough, then any athlete who wants to get selected for any 10K for Great Britain will make sure they're there. They know that's the number one race they have to do. They have to do that and they have to go run a time somewhere else.
Yeah.
Be there.
Yeah, Preet, do you think top one was a deterrent for a lot of people as well?
It feels like it could have been because, yeah, then what is the point? Why not go and do something else to show your form and your interest in team? And I think, yeah, because it was top one and because then you've got the other spots then potentially being taken by superstar athletes if they fancy it. And that's the thing you just don't know. I think that's the other aspect of it, right? You know that then if Megan Keith is not there and not winning this race, she's probably taking one of the other spots. And you don't know how many spots you've got to play for. And I just think that just makes it really difficult for athletes who are trying to make decisions about their summer and what they can qualify for and how they can get into stuff. Obviously, there was a lot of drama around Commonwealth selection as well, because I think the Welsh team's about to be selected and stuff. And there were some people at LIA, obviously in the sprints and stuff, but there was a bit of drama around some of that there as well. And I think it's really tough. I find it's really tough for athletes. I wouldn't want to be one, really. Especially given the summer we've got, it's really tough. Look, and I don't want to be overly negative, right? Ultimately, UK Athletics put on the meet.
Yep.
It was well organised for what it was. And if athletes had showed up, it would have been good. Because the weather was good. As it happened, they had wave lights. They had a few internationals. You know, there was some effort to make it good and it just didn't pan out. And yeah, it's hard to say exactly whose fault that is. And, I'm glad that they put it on and it's not the track 10K isn't entirely dead, but it is a tough spot for both the athletes and I think for UKA to kind of try and figure out how to do this well.
Yeah, no, I agree. So here's a thought. It's European 10,000 meter cup this weekend. We're sending six women who probably all would have raced on Saturday had they not have been selected for GB to run this weekend. We're only sending two men, Kavanagh and Ramsden. Could BA have said, do you know what? We could put on a 10K trial. The European 10K cup is a nice time of year. It's pretty much when we do it anyway. It's going to be good competition. You're going to be up against the likes, you know, the women are up against Battaglietti and many other Europeans. The guys are up against Kripa and Ayuni and loads of other French and Italian, Spanish people. The field is good. The wave lights, it's in Italy. It's beautiful conditions. It looks a bit warm actually, but other than that, they could have gone, do you know what? Let's send our six best 10K people on rankings. Let's send Beattie out there. Let's send Malarkey out there. Let's send Wigfield. Manthorpe's on the road rankings, isn't he? And any of those who did the marathon, if they think they can run. And obviously, given the opportunity to a couple of others like Ramsden and Kavanagh anyway. But they've pretty much done that on the women's side. You know, I guess Megan Keith, Izzy Fry, you know, you would expect to see them in that team. They've had different plans. Could they have just done that? Sent up basically our best six over to the European 10K Cup, like all the other nations do, and said, okay, we're basically going to pick the team off of this race. It's the closest we've got to the European Championships. It's going to give us a very good indication of what you can do in 8 to 10 weeks' time. It's plenty of time to recover. You're still getting a lot out of it because you can probably run fast. For me, that would have made more sense.
Yeah, I don't disagree that in theory, again, that's a great idea. It's obviously just getting the athletes to commit to something like that, right? And again, it's got to be really clear that this is the only way you get selected, right? And also then, I suppose the worry would be that what if there's more than six people who are in that mix? Mm-hmm. And obviously the reality is in the 10K, there aren't really. But you know, I think there's also then that becomes a little bit difficult because then there might be people who don't even get the opportunity to race in that trial. So that I don't know as I say, yeah, you're right. It would be a really great way
everyone,
to do it.
But the, you say they don't get the opportunity to race in the trial. BA put on the opportunity and no one wanted to do it.
Yeah,
and this is what frustrates me. You know, of course, they're looking out, you know, they're trying to be as fair as possible. But actually, when they give them the opportunity, it was the same last year in Birmingham. It was exactly the same as what you're saying, Preet. There were very few raced. You know, it was Emil, it was Ellis Cross, and on the women's side, Izzy Fry again. Same heads. And the opportunity's there and no one takes it. So, you know, I think that is, you know, for me in future, this European 10K Cup, if Highgate's not going to exist, we should be taking it. I mean, we're sending six women, which is brilliant, but we should be taking six men and six women every year. You know, this is a serious shot for people to have a crack at a good 10,000 on the track in a good competitive race. If Highgate isn't going to be around, that's probably the only chance the Brits get. And that should be, it is a selection in its own right. They accept road times. And I think athletes can get behind that, especially next year when you've got the World Championships back end of September as well. But yeah, I agree. I agree with what you're saying. There's always pros and cons. It's always difficult. The governing body have to obviously act in a way that's fair and gives everyone an equal opportunity. Said my piece. But were you just on the races itself then? Were you impressed with Wakefield, Kingston, like, or what's Wakefield's plans now?
I don't know, but I don't know what his plans are now, but I think he, you know, as I say, I think you're right. He said afterwards that it was tough, it wasn't easy, and he spent like about 10 minutes throwing up after the race, which you do after a hard race, bless him. It was rough, but thankfully he survived the podium before he started throwing up, which was otherwise that could have been unfortunate. But
Jesus.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, look, it's I think the other guys, like, I think it was just a tough race because the field spread out in the men's quite early on, relatively speaking, whilst I think in the women's, at least there were three women together for most of the race. But I mean, that was unfortunately Hannah Owen doing a lot of the work there, and Izzy Fry didn't do any work whatsoever, which made sense, right? She did zero work for that whole race. So she had the right strategy there. As I say, I didn't speak to the athletes about their plans, I think it was the race is
Europeans.
Go to Europeans, Izzy and Joe, I guess. And we'll see what happens with the rest of them. And I think it is like, it's interesting for a domestic season where we've got two home champs, but there's obviously going to be a lot of people who aren't going to be able to make it to those. And with the weird kind of way that Com Games is, where some of those athletes who would have been on the fringes are just not going to get to go because of space in the teams, right? Even though, you know, we're not sending three or whatever from Wales or Scotland or whatever, and some of these athletes would have gone in another year, they're not going to be able to go. And so I think that makes it really tricky, because it also takes a couple of weeks out the summer, right? When all the officials, all the like attention is going to be on Euros and Commies. And I don't know what it does to the summer kind of racing season for a lot of these athletes who are kind of there or thereabouts, but not quite, you know, going to the champs.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a bit of a pause there, isn't there? So,
yeah. Well, right, Preet, we'll let you get to work, mate.
All right.
We'll let you get on with your day.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks so much for jumping on.
All right, cheers.
Right, there we have it. So, the British 10K champs that wasn't part of Loughborough International on the same day as Loughborough International. Obviously, congrats to Izzy Fry and Joe Wigfield, cementing their place on those teams. Mate, should we look ahead now to LA Track Fest? I mean, Josh Kerr and Jay Wyman going in the 800. Excited to see how those guys go. The first track race out.
Yes.
Tiana Crawkins in there as well, from a British perspective.
That 800, I'm just getting it up now, man.
Yeah, Brazier, Kessler, Kerr, Wyman, Hopple, Zaya Harris, Corkin, Brandon Miller, obviously raced at the Diamond League.
That is a very good 800. For me, it's interesting. I think this is where we're going to see Whiteman a little bit potentially decide. I mean, he's doing the mile at Commies, but I think there's a world where he might fancy an 800 and at the Europeans. Yeah, we've seen him do it before. We've seen him medal there before. I guess it's going to depend how his season's shaping up. And yeah, so if he does do a few early season 800s, I think it's going to be very interesting. Good to see Kerr in the 800. I think that's it. It's been a weak event for Kerr, the 800. It's always surprised me that even his lifetime best is still only 145.0. Like, it hasn't broken 145. So, yeah, but what a field. You know, like you said, Brazier, Hobbs Kessler, Hopple, like this is, it's stacked. And Tinner Crawford, for me, this is a huge head-to-head for him. Like, he can go there and he can scalp Josh Kerr and he can scalp Wyman away. You know, he's moving very well. I think he's definitely going to be, he's almost like, you know, when you look at last year as well, I think we've got Patterson, we've got Bergen. Again, I'm not sure how Bergen's doing. He could well be injured. It seems quiet, but you know, we've got those two guys. And I think Crawken for me this year is going to be that next man. But everyone else, yeah, it's still a long way to go. But considering how close the champs are now, like, we're coming up for 4 weeks, and
yeah, I think we're talking about it like it's early season, but actually there's not that much time.
Well,
is
in terms of the champs, there's not that much time. And actually, this season just hasn't got going yet. I think the weather hasn't been great in the UK, which has affected a lot of races, you know, when it comes to fast races. So I think this weekend for me, we're going to start to see, I mean, we're looking at the LA Trackfest start list, but also the Belgium start list, a lot of Brits out there. So I think things are going to get ticking this weekend, and there's going to be a really big push over the next 2 or 3 weeks before people sort of shut it down and give themselves a rest week going into British Champs. So, no, that's a stacked 800. Let's go through a few other events at this track fest.
Yeah, I mean, women's steeple, pretty stacked as well in terms of names. Obviously, Elise Thorner going in there,
yes.
From a British perspective as well. Men's steeple, you got Kenneth Rooks in there, kind of usual kind of American fields though as well, in both those men's and women's steeples. Men's 1500, we got a few interesting names in there. Vinciati's in there, Graham Blank's going in the 15, Cooper-Tier, Nico Young, so a few guys stepping down, Parker Wolf's in there, but that's pretty much it. No Brits in that one.
No, it's the 5000. It's Adam Fogg and Malarkey in the men's 5k. And it's a strong 5K. You've got Dylan Jacobs, Mohamed, Hapton Samuel, you know, Woody Kincaid, Morgan McDonald. Drew Hunter. Looking at that, it's going to be a big... I mean, a lot of those guys are probably just going to be targeting 13 minutes, 13:10. So that's a big opportunity for Malarkey and Fogg. Interesting to see. Fogg seems to be starting to really commit to that 5K. Definitely the way he trains and stuff like that. So is this a late bid for him to try and get on that 5K team, either at commies or Europeans?
Yeah, makes sense. It's a year to do it, right? It's a year to have a go. And look, someone else having a bit of a go in the 5K, Katie Snowden's in the women's 5000 as well. Obviously, we know how good she is at 3000 meters, but see how she goes in that.
Yeah, Parker Valby hasn't raced much at all since becoming a pro. She's in there, so that'll be interesting. But and then the only, I think Ellie Baker's in the 15, women's 15.
Yeah, yeah, so does Del Tracy as well.
Yeah.
And Shelby Hooland in it.
That women's 15 field actually looks a little bit weak. It's a bunch of like 402, 405 runners in there. So whether that will be quick enough. But it's a good season opener for Baker actually. So, but it's stacked. And in the other sections as well, like you've got people like Craig Engels and making section 2 in the 1500. Like section 2 in the 15 is, you know, Joe Waxham, Craig Engels,
Mario Garcia Romo is in there.
329 boy. Yeah. And I think actually, let me just look at section 2 in the 5.
Brandon Kidder. That's a name for the ages.
Literally. This second section in the 5 is actually not too good. Just seeing if there's any Brits just sneaking in there. No. So yeah, LA Track Fest. Also, it is a stat weekend. And what's interesting, look, we're talking about, you know, Brits obviously not doing that 10K and being pulled elsewhere. I think I saw the Paavo Nurmi start list came out. Leonard, BT, they're going to be in Paavo Nurmi, which is the 3rd of June, I think. So a couple of weeks, basically 2 weeks today. And they're going to be racing out of that 5K looks strong. But there is a race tonight, and it's the Berlin Fast 5K, and it's on the road. And I'm stunned to see, I mean, Mark Scott, I can understand, you know, for him, it's first race back in a while. Like he's just going to turn over on the roads and it's probably just a nice introduction. But, you know, to see the Wheelers and Leonard out there and, you know, there's other Brits out there and Jimmy Whelan, the field actually, doesn't look very strong. You know, I'd probably say like Leonard Wheeler, they're going to be the head of this field. And, you know, they're going to a race in Berlin here on the roads, which, and look, I could look like a fool tomorrow, but the record is set by Daniel Benyo, who is, what's his, I mean, he's a very good athlete, and the record is only 13:28. So it doesn't strike me as, you know, it might be a fast road course, but it doesn't strike me as an opportunity to go and challenge for a European standard. So we talk about the 10K, you know, sort of is a waste of energy for some men, but that option to then go to the roads is baffling. Like, you travel out there and you do a road 5K in the peak of track season. Like, look what's on the horizon this weekend. You've got Brussels. You know, you've got LA Track Fest, which I know is in America, but still, you've got Even Comeback 5000 on Friday. Like,
you mentioned it before, though, and athletes talk, and these guys are all saying, "Oh, let's all go do this meet. We'll have a little race." And
Look, Daniel Benyo, just to put it into context, is a 12:54 guy and a 26:57 guy. Like, you know, and he's got this course record in Berlin at 13:28, which maybe a few of the Brits go and break, which would be amazing. But yeah, it might be a fun race. But are you gonna run 13:10? You know,
No, I'm with you. And whereas if you look at Ortegum this weekend in terms of the women's five, loads of our top athletes are on a start list there. So Megan Keefe's down to race. India Weir, Carrie Hughes, Verity Ockenden, Laura Muir, all entered in the 5K.
Yeah, that's stacked.
Whereas on a men's side, you kind of.
I wonder if Megan Keith would do that when she sees a start. I mean, it's a season opener, and she can go win that race. Yeah. Fastest on paper, but it's quite thin at 14:45. It's very thin, and there's a whole cluster of women sort of 15:00 to 15:10. But I guess Laura Muir obviously has a very good PB, but doesn't seem to be in the shape that she once was. So interesting that she's looking at the five. I wonder if she's starting to think about, should I target that for Europeans tactical race? But I don't know if it ever is going to be tactical with Battaglietti in there, and no one's going to get near her on the last lap. So be very intrigued to see how Laura Muir does. But yeah, that women's five is stacked. Let's look at a men's five in Brussels.
In Brussels, sorry? Yeah. Philip Ingebrigtsen's in there.
Put it this way.
Jimmy Crow, Bouchard.
Yeah, it's Magnus Meyer. Yeah, a couple Kenyans, a couple Spaniards. Yeah, good. Very deep. Yeah, McCluckie, Crow, Butchie, McMillan.
Did you say BT was down to race tonight in Berlin?
No, BT's not.
Yeah, because BT's entered on the weekend.
Yeah, he's running the 1500 on the weekend, isn't he? Is he in the 15?
Yeah, BT's in the 15. Elson's in the 15. Archie Davies, Sam Carrick, McMurray, Alex Malloy.
Yeah, in the 15 as well, which is another. Sam Tanner's in there, another deep field. Men's steeple, Pierce and Battersill are in there. Men's 800, Henry Jonas is in there. Henry Fisher, Guy Limonth, Tom Randolph's heading out. So, but they are just Peyton Craig leads the lineup. But it is just that Brussels meet, they do such a good job there. I mean, when you look at those 5,000s, where does. Oh my God, if you're trying to break 14, you'll be in about race. You'll probably be in the D race, if not the sort of E or F race. This is about 85, 90 men, sub 14. Whew, bloody hell. Yeah, very impressive. Same sort of depth on the women's side as well. The women's 15, Carrie Hughes, Molly Hudson, Abby Ives. Abby Ives is also entered in the 800.
Yes, Carrie Hughes in the 5 as well, so we'll see what she chooses.
Yeah, and not too many in the 8 over there, actually, from a British perspective, but a good few internationals. So yeah, IFAM in Brussels is going to be the big one this weekend. And then on home soil, Comeback 5000 is obviously one to watch. The European 10,000 meter cup, I'll be commentating on that on Saturday night. That'll be live on European Athletics YouTube. And yeah, like I said, for me, the Italians have gone in strong. They've got Ayuni, they've got Crippa, two very accomplished marathon men. And you've got a strong French team. Gressier announced he was doing it a little while back, but doesn't seem to be on the start list that I've been handed to. But you've got Bastien Augusto, Valentin Gondion, who is a 27:40 man. You know, Simon Bedard as well, another 27:40 guy. A couple Spaniards who are in the 27:40. And this is what I mean about it seems a shame that we're only sending two British men over to this race, because it is going to be a, well, hands down, a sub 28 minute race, and there's going to be great depth on that as well. And then on the women's side, I'm delighted to see Battaglietti's doing it as well. Definitely going to force the issue. And again, a huge opportunity for six of our British women to go over there. The way they structure it, there's an A race, there's a B race, and there's a C race, and they basically just seed you on times. So a couple of our British women might be in the B race. They haven't broken down the races yet or assigned athletes to a given race yet. I've just got the long list of start lists. But it's a fun way to score it as well, I think. You know, it's the aggregate time of your first three runners for the team prize. So there's a team prize and obviously individual prizes. It's a really impressive event. We saw it at Highgate quite a few years ago now. I think it was pre-COVID, wasn't it? But, you know, it's still going strong. It seems to be growing in stature. And, you know, fair play to European athletics for putting this race on, you know, time and time again. Because, yeah, in a world where 10,000 meter running is quite scarce, it's a good opportunity. And I think we should lean into that more as a nation now over the next few years, because we've been banking on Highgate and that seems to be on the rocks. And, you know, of course, there's that Sound 10K in early March that people go to, but that's all the way in LA. It's difficult travel.
It's not feasible for everyone, is it?
It's not feasible for everyone.
We talk about it like it's just a race you go and do. But
and I would say the races are too quick. They're 27-minute races on the men's side and on the women's side as well. They're very quick races. Whereas this European one is much more like a train of people. You know you're going to, you know, on the men's side, on the women's side, there's going to be a bunch of women running sub 32 minutes. And on the men's side, same bunch of men running 27:40, 27:50.
Absolutely. Well, look, mate, I think that wraps us up in terms of what's to come. I mean,
there's Diamond League this weekend as well. The Xiamen Diamond League. Mate, we've got Diamond Leagues back to back now for 4 weeks, I think. Xiamen, Rabat, Rome. Pretty sure they're back to back. But the thing is with Xiamen, obviously, basically anyone who ran Shanghai is basically just, they're just all going and running.
May as well.
You know, Xiamen as well. There's another women's 1500. So it's basically exactly the same field. There's a men's 5K instead of a 3K, and it's exactly the same field. There's a women's steeple. Huh. There's a mixed 5K. It's just Chinese people. It's actually from a distance perspective. You just got women's steeple, men's 5, women's 15. So that's it. But it's all the same. All the same names.
Yeah. There you have it. Mate, before we wrap up, obviously shout out again to the guys at GoWad, sorting us out with that premium subscription. We did realize one thing you can do for all you Strava junkies out there, who love sharing it. You can now integrate your GoWad with your Strava so everyone can know how much stretching you're doing. So Matt, is that something you're going to be doing yourself?
I probably should. You know,
I'm a Strava stats up. I've not recorded on Strava in a while, you know. I've been Casio running a lot.
Well,
15 to 25 minutes. Just
it all counts, mate. It all counts.
Oh yeah, yeah. But it's nice because I don't think about think about how slow I'm going, to be honest.
Yeah, I know. No, I think that is a Strava has its perks when it comes to an accountability standpoint, right? And a lot of people use
it. It's nice when you're flying. Yeah. I almost need a new Strava account though, so I could start running like new
records. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, give it a few years, mate, and you'll step into the Vet 35 category, and then
it's true.
Then you can, you know, your PBs are rewritten.
Yeah, but there's too many good vets these days. Though it's not a category.
I can't admit, Mark English.
Kipchoge and Legat.
Mark English, 33 years of age, is. I remember reading articles on him last year, actually, and I do think his longevity should be studied in that event in the 800, because just chipping away like that is very, very impressive. And he's had a real up and down career as well. Like, you think he's a very relatable runner for a lot of people, I think, in our country, because, you know, he's been unsponsored. He's worked in, you know, he's trained in and around work at times, you know, and he's doing it in an event which is very demanding. You know, I think distance running, you can work a 9-to-5 and just bank miles and get, you know, get to a pretty high level.
At least keep yourself in good nick.
Yeah.
At certain times of year. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas the 800 is very demanding to fit around, you know, the, the sort of the gym work that you have to do, the speed work that you have to do, the weather, the climate that you need to seek in order to really make sure you get the best out of yourself. So, yeah, he's probably performance of the week. But yeah, well, we look forward to next week where we break down. The rankings are really going to change next week. All of these races, it's going to be a big episode.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, if like Preet, you want to jump in on a conversation, let us know. We'll get you guys on. If you missed it as well, Matt sat down with Ross Murray a couple weeks ago now, and we released that episode on Sunday. So yeah, really some really nice perspectives in there, looking back on his career, and I guess like it was nice because I listened back, mate, and it was nice to just hear him actually talk quite fondly about his career, because I think you think of Ross Murray from the outside looking in anyway, and you think, oh, that guy must be like disappointed and like, oh, what could have been. But actually, like, the way he spoke about something, look, he went to the greatest Olympics ever from like for British people, right? And that you can't I guess downplay that, even though he had such a short time, like going from actually thinking about going to go and try and get a good scholarship in the US to running Olympic qualifying time within a few months. But
yeah,
you can't downplay that at all. And it was nice that he kind of looked back on that fondly, you know?
Yeah. And I think the age in which he did that as well, like at training the other day, one of the lads reminded me that Ross Murray must have been like a third year or fourth year uni student and went to Olympic Games. Like, that is nuts. Imagine if that happened. Well, you mentioned
Phoebe Gill like on a bit of a comeback this weekend as well, and I was thinking about that. Like, she'd gone to uni injured as an Olympian.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. Phoebe Gill was interesting in her interview. Actually, she
speaking about Roland as well,
Doing a good job up there. But I think it's a smart move for her to target the World Under 20s this year and just kind of like focus on getting back this year, focus on being competitive, because it's still an extremely high standard. It's still going to take her, you know, 158 or whatever, 157 probably to win that thing, or you at least be capable of that. And so I think that's a wise move. And the Europeans are, what, a week or two after the World Juniors. And so I think maybe she'll have the option there. But it just takes the heat off her a little bit with champs around the corner and everyone like, oh, Phoebe goes back. Yeah. And I think it just allows her to ease in a bit more this year. And then,
well, junior comps are there for a reason, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah.
And she still needs that. You know, she has done amazing. She's been through all the age groups, but I think she still needs that experience at championship racing when also the pressure's on. You know, people, she'll do probably a lot of media when she's out at the World Juniors. She'll be the face of the 800, I have no doubt. So that's going to be an experience for her as well, which I think
is a bit of expectation on her shoulders to win it, versus going to a champs and everyone saying, oh, we'll just have fun, soak it up. But athletes need that sometimes to say, no, We want you to go there and you're expected to win. You're the favourite and it'll be great. So, yeah, absolutely. Right. I think that wraps us up for this week, mate.
It does.
Yeah. Next time we record, we'll know about West Ham. We'll know about Spurs.
Hey, we'll be talking about the World Cup. World Cup.
Mate, it's nice to be able to relax about the Premier League now. It's been a long off season, mate.
I think we'll be. I think we've got too much to do on Sunday. But look, could be some last day magic. We'll see.
Yeah. There you have it. Right. Thanks for listening to us. We'll catch you guys very soon.